Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with Janet Schlopkel. She's the writer and director of the new play Shell Shocked from Combined Efforts Theater in Iowa City. But first, in 2015, a Pew Research Center study on religious participation in the United States demonstrated that not only is church attendance going down, the number of people who identify themselves as affiliated with a specific religion is also declining. Dramatically. In her book, Tired of Apologizing for a Church I Don't Belong to, Pastor Lillian Daniel makes the case for church and religious community. She's the pastor at the First Congregational Church in Dubuque, Iowa, and she is with me now. Hello, Pastor Daniel.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I want to start with the title of the book, Tired of Apologizing for a Church I Don't Belong to. You write a lot about this impulse that you have had in the past and an impulse that you see in many other people to, when they identify themselves as Christian, to also try to take on responsibility for all of the bad things that have ever been done in the name of Christianity. Tell me more about that impulse.
Well, to me, it kind of hit me. I mean, I'm part of a church, First Congregational Church in Dubuque, where we're very open. We'll do your gay wedding. You know, obviously, we have women ministers, right? And I found myself just cringing when other representatives of the Christian family, you know, who I don't want to see at the family reunion, would get all the airtime. So it was sort of my worst nightmare was when there's a natural disaster, a hurricane, a tsunami, and there's some nutty preacher up there who gets on the news who says it's the fault of the people who were hurt, you know, that they did something wrong or were sinful. And that's the kind of thing that I found myself always wanting to apologize for and to say, you know, we're not like them, or I'm really sorry, thinking if I just apologized enough, people would realize, oh, you know, you see it too.
And you don't feel like people, when they see things like that in the news or wherever it may be very visible to people, you don't feel like they make a distinction between that person or that specific sex group of beliefs and Christianity in general?
I think there was a day when you could assume that people would make those distinctions because they knew those differences. But the statistic that you quoted just now about the number of people who will check off none as their religious, you know, preference, some of those have left a religious community or the church, and they probably would know how to distinguish, but a lot of those people have never experienced religious community. So what they see on the news is what they think Christianity might be.
Even though, just in defense of what we do see and hear on the news, there are usually definitions that go along with it. The, you know, a representative of this congregation, or at least a specific kind of approach to Christianity. You hear the evangelical voters say, you know, that kind of thing. But you don't feel like people actually are listening to those qualifiers.
Absolutely not. I mean, I think there was a time when you could have all these hyphenated Christians, you know, oh, I'm a progressive Christian, I'm a conservative Christian, I'm an evangelical Christian. But we've got a lot of people who are like, what's a Christian?
One of the places where you said this particularly struck you was when you were reading papers written by eighth graders in your church. These were confirmation students in your own church. Tell me about what you read there and how it struck you.
Yeah, so in the congregational church, we expect the lay people to ask questions. We believe you. There are many ways to interpret scripture. We would hardly be called a fundamentalist church, right? And yet when I read these papers by my own kids in my own church who were raised in this Sunday school with this openness, they would say things like, I'm not sure I'm ready to become an adult member of the church because I believe in dinosaurs. Or, you know, I don't believe the world was created in 6 days. And I'm going, who in this church building ever told you that you couldn't believe in dinosaurs? You know, we would be all about evolution and the mystery of creation. And that's where I learned that as much as we could shape them within our congregation, there were stereotypes and cultural forces out there that were still making them kind of embarrassed to be a Christian because of what was out there.
Even in eighth grade?
Especially in eighth grade. I mean, in the eighth grade, you're embarrassed about everything.
Well, yes, but you're not necessarily very aware of things that are being said and projected in the news.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I actually think kids are aware. And I think particularly in that sort of middle school group, that's almost where you start. Some kids will first realize that there are other forms of Christianity out there and they don't want to be associated with it. Because, you know, that's an age where people are cliquish and judgmental and, I mean, maybe we don't improve much as we age, but it does seem like that's kind of a tough age. And I think they become aware of what people's perceptions are.
So there's that impulse to apologize, but it seems to me that given what you're saying about how people really don't see different branches of Christianity as different or different churches as different, I mean, maybe there is a need to explain.
Yeah, I think there has been a need to explain. And I also want to make it clear, I'm not saying that the church shouldn't apologize for serious wrongs. Like there are amazingly powerful stories of churches apologizing for schools that mistreated, you know, whole groups of people based on race, right? Like, that's the kind of stuff, yes, like, we should apologize for that when we do terrible things like that. But yeah, it's more the general anxiety apologizing where you find yourself sort of desperately trying to say to the person, like, listen, I'm as outraged by the Crusades and the Inquisition as you are, you know, and the Salem, like, witch trial burnings, like, I'm horrified by that, but we're trying to cut back on it. You know, like, you're almost, like, ready to condemn your church even more than the other person is to prove that there are other options. And I think it's very confusing in a world where a lot of people just have no background. And they're sitting there going, wait, like, there was a point where you were burning witches, you know?
So one of the things that you write a lot about is you have an acronym for them, the SBNRs of the world. It's the spiritual but not religious people. So this is something that you hear from more and more people. These are people also reflected in that survey done by the Pew Research Center, where somebody won't say that they are religious, but they might tell you, yes, I'm a spiritual person. I'm not affiliated with any kind of official religion. I can experience God or whatever spiritual beliefs that I have in my own ways. You're not a big fan of this approach. Why not?
Well, I'm a fan of it, but I don't think it's enough. So obviously I believe that you can experience God in the sunset and walking on the beach by yourself. Obviously I don't think God is, you know, locked up in one particular building on Sunday morning at 10:30, you know, and can't get anywhere else, right? So, I mean, obviously I get the spiritual part, and that's throughout Scripture and all the traditions. But when they say they're not religious, often what that tells me is that they, or at least this is what I used to think, is that they were saying they rejected the community aspect. And the root of the word religion is community. And that's the piece that I think is also meaningful. You can find God on the sunset, but there's also that tradition that is older and bigger than you are, and you don't do it all by yourself. And that kind of takes you to the next level or pushes you past easy answers. I mean, my sense is that when we try to make up our own God, that God tends to agree with us on pretty much everything.
So you feel like the people who might say, I'm spiritual but not religious, they are taking an easier path.
Yeah, and sort of representing our highly individualized, some would say narcissistic culture, where nobody wants to be a joiner. And everybody sort of thinks, you know, I can find my own truth and read a few Oprah books, et cetera, and find it my own way. And so I wrote a book previously called When Spiritual But Not Religious Is Not Enough. And I was making the case that it's meaningful to add some religious community or tradition to that mix, and also sort of pushing back on sometimes the spiritual but not religious will talk about religious people in really insulting ways, like we're all horrible, judgmental people who sort of march in line following a charismatic evil leader or that kind of thing. And so I just wanted to push back and say, hey, spiritual but not religious person, don't assume I don't see God in the sunset. You know, of course I do. And I also think there's value in a tradition of some kind. And I truly would be delighted if anyone read that book, if they joined a synagogue or a mosque. It's not about sort of claiming that my path is the right way, but it is saying there's a real antipathy against religious community right now in our culture. And I want to sort of name that because it's often coming from people who would consider themselves to be extremely open-minded and tolerant.
It is interesting. I think about the community that I grew up in, and there was one church that was really the right church to go to, and my family didn't go to that church. And I had a lot of classmates who were concerned about where my soul was going and loved to tell me about the bad choices that my family made, you know, based on that. And so this spiritual but not religious idea, it feels a lot more like, oh, well, I believe what I believe, you believe what you believe. It feels to me like there's a lot more tolerance involved in it. But you're saying that you're not necessarily feeling like that, that there is a judgmental aspect to it as well.
Well, I tell you, writing books is a wonderful thing because you learn what you think, and then you learn new things and you change your mind. So when I was writing the spiritual but not religious book, I had in mind this judgmental person who I had met 1,000 times, who when they found out I was Christian would assume that I only believed there was one path to heaven, that I was going to try to save them, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, I was pushing back on that person who would act as almost superior to the religious person, like I'm more evolved, you know. And I pushed back on that. What I found out was that after writing the book, of course, when you write a book about the spiritual but not religious, you will hear from them.
Lots of them, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it was great. I had some fantastic conversations. And one of the really interesting things I learned was that there are actually a lot of people who go to church and call themselves spiritual but not religious, and it's their way of kind of being in the closet and not being associated with some other group of Christians who possibly harmed them or injured them in the past.
Interesting. Well, we'll talk more about the different kinds of people who choose not to affiliate with a specific religion in a couple of minutes. I'm talking with Pastor Lillian Daniel. Her most recent book is Tired of Apologizing for a Church I Don't Belong to. She's the pastor at the First Congregational Church in Dubuque, Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll talk with the writer and director of the new play Shell Shocked from Combined Efforts Theater in Iowa City. Right now, I'm with Pastor Lillian Daniel. She's the author of the new book, Tired of Apologizing for a Church I Don't Belong to. You are welcome to join our conversation as well, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Pastor Daniel, just before the break, I mentioned that I wanted to dig in a little bit further to the people who, when asked what their religion is, will click that box and say none. You have quantified or broken down the idea of the different kinds of nones in our society. And I want to talk about the people that you see who have either turned away from or not chosen a religion in our culture. So let's talk through some of your definitions. Your number one none, that's N-O-N-E, is the no way. Who are these people?
Yeah, so the four categories are the no ways, the no longers, the never haves, and the not yets. And the way I can prove that my theory is correct is that they all begin with the same letter. but you know, it's an easy way to remember it. But the no ways and the no longers would be people who have some experience of religious community. But the no ways have literally made a decision to leave. They don't want it. They're not interested. You know, often they've been seriously injured or hurt by the church in some way that you have to take seriously, and they're saying no way. Now, the no longers are the people who might not be able to say why, but they just sort of drifted, and they didn't miss it, And if a funeral comes up or a family tragedy, they may return. They have that basis maybe of Christianity or something like it, but they're not as hot under the collar about it. And then what you see is if those people are often, say, baby boomers, their children then make up another group of people who check off none, but for very different reasons. The never-haves have never experienced church or religious community. So they're checking it off because they've never experienced it. And then there are the not-yets, and that's the group who have not experienced it, but I think are genuinely curious. And so often in the life of the church, when we try to apologize for a church we don't belong to and say, oh, we're not like those people, we're really talking to the no-longers and the no-ways. We're saying, whatever church it is that you left, we're different, right? And when we talk to the never-haves and not-yets, and we talk about stuff like that, they're baffled because they're asking totally different questions.
And you feel like in many congregations, when they're trying to recruit new members or they're trying to talk to these people, that they're really only talking to the no-ways or the no-longers.
Yeah, like the example you used from when you were a kid, you know, that church was saying to you, you go to the wrong church, you know, we're the right kind of church because here you'll be saved, unlike those non-Bible-believing churches. And you can see it go in the other direction where more liberal churches will say, oh, no, you know, we have women ministers and we came out for gay marriage and blah, blah, blah. And for the person who's never experienced it, they're going, wait, like, are there religions that don't let women be leaders? You know, and the questions they're really asking are questions like when that leader person, that minister is up there in church talking out loud in the prayers, who does she think she's talking to? You know, that would be a question of the never haves. They're not particularly interested in how you get to be a minister or who gets to be a minister or the politics.
Well, and one of the other things that you write about is the idea that you don't have to necessarily agree with everything that your church represents, or you don't have to. You were talking about those eighth graders earlier and the idea that, oh, I believe in dinosaurs, so I can't be a Christian. But it goes farther than that. The idea that if somebody comes to your church and they have questions or they don't believe everything that they feel they need to. But you're saying that these people are still welcome in your congregation and need to be welcome in a congregation.
And for most of Christianity's 2,000-year history, there was no problem with diversity of opinion and people interpreting scripture and interpreting creeds. It's really a relatively recent historical glitch, an American glitch, you know, last 100 years, just over 100 years ago, the fundamentalist movement begins, and basically they say, here are these like five things you got to believe, and this makes you a Christian. And everybody else says, gosh, I'm not sure I believe those things. And for most of Christian history, they didn't think that way. They thought of following Jesus as a way of living, not as like five things you give your intellectual assent to. So I have a chapter in the book that's called, it gets kind of a controversial reaction, but it's called, I'm a pastor and I don't care what you believe. And in a sense, it is true. Like, I'm trying to get people to have a way of life and a way of being. And also, I think that ministers go to seminary. We learn all this stuff about the Bible. And then often we don't tell our parishioners about it because we think it's going to rattle them. But I'm all in favor of assuming that the person in the pew is intelligent and that they want nuance. And so, you know, I'm going to say, look, find me one place in the Bible where Jesus says the secret to eternal life is that you have to believe my mother was a virgin. It's not in there, you know? And to sort of glom on to these things that people think of, like the world was created in 6 days, it's not in there. When you actually read those texts, they're written mythologically, and they're right next to other texts that if it were all literal, they'd be contradicting each other.
I'm talking with Pastor Lillian Daniel. She is the pastor at the First Congregational Church in Dubuque, Iowa. Her latest book is Tired of Apologizing for a Church I Don't Belong to. You are welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Miles is on the line from Decorah. Hi, Miles.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah, what would you like to talk about?
I just wanted to quickly give a little insight. I definitely associate myself as someone that is spiritual, but not religious. And I've traveled the world and had some pretty amazing experiences. And this is something that really struck me deeply when your host said, you know, the sense of community may not be, it might be rejected. I first wanted to just say that I found an amazing community of people that sort of believe more in line with what I believe. And I've always felt like I longed for that community. I'd go to church, and I applaud your host for being open to sort of accepting people with different varying beliefs. But my experience had always been, you know, if you don't believe in Jesus in such a literal form that you basically aren't welcome here, or, you know, we need to change you. And that always really rubbed me the wrong way. I'm an engineer and kind of science-minded, but just wanted to say I've recently, in the last couple of years, really found myself in the spiritual aspect, because what I realized was that, you know, I don't have to really literally believe in all of the literal aspect of Jesus and all these things, but just believing that what Jesus was saying was that we have access to this sort of infinite love, and that will, that, and believing that and knowing that we are a part of, I guess, in my opinion, sort of this eternal energy, you know, of the universe, and no matter what it is or how we, whatever we want to define it as being, we are truly a part of that. And I guess for me, that's been very healing. And I just want to say that, you know, I think that the way that churches and spiritual leaders could have more success in maybe obtaining and creating this community that I think we all want to be a part of would be in sort of embracing that and saying, you know, here are the scriptures, here are the things that are written. A lot of this is very open, you know, to interpretation, and obviously has been repeated throughout history. But the reality is what we're here to share is the fact that we exist, that we love, and that we're a part of that love. And I think that's maybe my frustration. And there's a community of people that live sustainably and we're connected to the earth, and we sing and we have fires. And I just want to say that those things are happening out there. It doesn't take a church or I always felt like I was sort of confined to a box, and it doesn't take that. So I can take your response off the air. Thank you.
Sure. Miles, thanks a lot for your call. And Pastor Daniel, I'm sure that you've heard a lot of what Miles is saying before.
Yeah, and I'm ready to hire him as like an associate pastor. I mean, in that nothing he said there would in my congregation be shocking or upsetting to people. And actually, I think there's room in the Christian tradition and always has been for that. And what I regret is the perception that it wouldn't be welcome. And I do recognize that there are a lot of churches where that would not be welcome. I'll give you an example. I showed up this summer on a holiday weekend, 8:30 service, expecting a small crowd, and I had these sort of Westboro Baptist-style protesters outside my church with megaphones and hideous, hateful signs saying, you know, God hates fags and all kinds of awful stuff, and they were screaming and yelling at people coming into church and yelling at me and saying I was a wicked apostate as a woman leader. And, you know, yeah, it's hard to not believe that that exists when they show up and they get attention like that. But what was fascinating was that a kid in the congregation videotaped the whole interchange, and the video of that went viral because it sort of had these people claiming to be Christians screaming and yelling through bullhorns. And then there were all these, like, regular parishioners and myself trying to behave in love but not accepting their definitions and just trying to get people safely in. And I think a lot of people who had really soured on church loved that little Facebook video because it gave them hope and it made it so clear that there are these differences between how we exist and what we think. And there's a lot of variety out there.
You make the case for church in a lot of different ways, but just give me a couple of minutes of why you feel like it is something that can be valuable to somebody like Miles or someone else who says, you know, I don't believe literally what's written in the Bible. I live an ethical life. I do have a spirituality, but why should that person go to a church and take the time to find a church where they feel like they belong?
Yeah. Well, first, I'm not going to assume that Miles doesn't have that. you know, what he was describing and sitting around fires together, et cetera, that may well be a religious community. I'm not going to judge that from a distance. At least it sounds like there's community, and that's a big piece. But another aspect of religious community is generally a sense of history and something bigger and older than you are. So as bizarre and difficult as the Bible is, and the Bible is basically like a library, a collection of like really weird books, there is something amazing about thinking for 2,000 years, Christians have read these letters and wrestled with them from this totally different time period where people took it for granted that women were like property or you could own slaves. You know, why would we bother with that, right? And because there is some amazing piece of that that is deep and true and puts us in community with sort of a cloud of witnesses that went before. And when you think of Christianity growing out of the Judaism of Jesus, you're connected to an even longer community. And that, to me, has power. I think that the make-it-up-yourself spirituality can work perfectly well when your life is going well. But when somebody young gets cancer, right? I mean, that's nature. And you can say, oh, I see God in nature all the time. Okay, how about cancer? Like, these are much more difficult questions about why is it that bad things happen to good people? How do we cope with that? Those are the questions that you get into in confirmation class and in your adult life of faith in different religious traditions. And you do it with community and other people who've wrestled with it at the same time.
We had a caller, Jean, call and said there are a lot of people who say that they're spiritual but not religious, but that they feel that there isn't a group that shares their beliefs. When she goes to church, she has a hard time with it. She says this is also a thorny topic in a small town. It's hard in a rural community where there might be only one church. That's a really difficult problem that it's hard to get around. But how do you find a church where you feel like you belong? Because going and just listening on one Sunday morning probably isn't going to tell you what you need to know.
It's really true. And I feel this. I mean, this is, I guess, part of why part of my calling is I write books, because I do hear from people all around the world who say, for whatever reason, what you said in here is something I never get to hear in my own church. So, you know, there's reading, there's exploring that way. But I also will sometimes push back on people who say they can't find a church, because sometimes they really have struggled and looked. But a lot of times when you scratch beneath the surface, you know, they might have been to church 15 years ago, and they're still painting every church with that stereotype. And so, you know, it's kind of like saying, you know, well, I thought about going to college, and I went to this one college 15 years ago, and I didn't like it, and so now I don't believe in college. You know, and that's often what you will find. So I kind of like to push back a little and say, explore more. And particularly when the person is making blanket statements, like when somebody says something like, you know, religion is responsible for all the wars in history. When somebody says that, I have to push back. I have to say, if I said to you, the people of France are responsible for all the wars in history, like you would say I was a bigot, right? You can't talk that way about religion, those sweeping terms. And when is the last time that you actually visited one of these communities that you're talking about in that way?
You also have a lot of advice in the book for how churches can approach people, approach visitors, and share their message. The idea that there's just one right way to believe is something that's behind a lot of proselytizing or a lot of witnessing to people. Mm-hmm. And I know that's something that you don't like. But spreading your message, recruiting people, telling them that they're welcome, there's kind of a fine line between doing that and sounding like you're proselytizing. So how do you walk that line?
Right. I mean, that is exactly the dilemma. When you're an open-minded, tolerant person who goes to church, your worst fear is that you would come off as superior or intolerant, right? But it almost can go to comical extremes. When somebody who truly hasn't experienced religious life before is asking you, like, well, why do you go to church? And you're like, well, it's not like you have to go to church, and I'd be fine if you didn't go to church. And they're like, no, but I really want to know, like, what do you find there? Well, nothing better than you'd find, you know, in the woods, I'm sure, you know. Like, it just gets almost comical, where it's almost like we're in the closet about it. And I do think that people who find value in religious community that is open-minded have to learn how to talk about that and share that and not be afraid to, because if only the lunatics get to talk about Christianity, you know, we've got a problem.
What do you want people to take away from reading your book?
I think I'd like them first to realize we have a sense of humor behind these, you know, stained glass windows and walls, that there's intellectual rigor and exploration, that there's a tremendous amount of diversity of points of view. And also, I think there's stories in there, like the stories that my church members might tell about the difference that religious community made in their lives. There's a God story there where it's something mysterious, like, I was going through a divorce. I didn't know how to put one foot in front of the other. I barely came to church that day. The sermon was incomprehensible to me, but the third verse of that hymn brought tears to my eyes, and suddenly I felt loved, and I can't tell you why. You know, or that, you know, when
and
I was...
Lillian, we are out of time, but thank you so much for talking with me. Pastor Lillian Daniel, the book is Tired of Apologizing for a Church I Don't Belong To. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.